All right, you may be seated. Mr. Bowles?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mayor, police, court, counsel, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I want to start also as I did when this began, which I want to sincerely thank you for your time and attention and all of your work on this case. It's been hard. It's been a long case, and I want to thank you first. On behalf of Ms. Gutierrez Reed, who this is extremely important for her, this case, and this is her day in court. And it's extremely important that the government rule out every reasonable doubt that there is in this case, because that is our standard in this country. Reasonable doubt is a concept, meaning if you have any reasonable doubt, if you have a reasonable doubt, we cannot convict people in this country. That's how it's set up. Because of that, the burden is on the prosecution, always stays on the prosecution, and so they have to rule out all of the reasonable doubts. In this case, and I'm going to talk about a lot of the evidence soon, but I just want to start with a summary. The prosecutor just presented to you a series of pictures, and those were the pictures they paid the guy $10,000 to enlarge. And they went through the pictures and they tried to show that there were silver primers, and this is going to be definitive evidence that these live rounds had to be on set at a particular time. Let me tell you why there's reasonable doubt number one that they will never be able to rule out in this case. Sarah Zachary threw away rounds. She unquestionably threw away rounds after the shooting. It's undisputed. We have no idea what those look like. We will never have an idea what they look like, and that will never be able to be overcome. That one fact alone prevents that entire picture setup that was just shown to you from being accurate, from being real. Because we have no idea what those other rounds, whether they had silver primers, whether they were dummies, whether they were other types of dummies, what they look like, we have no idea. Fact two on the pictures. Seth Kinney told you he had gotten live rounds from Thel Reed that went to the 1883 set. Those live rounds were three types. There were three types of bullets. He then brought back around 125 of those, of the three types. Now, the ones that the state seized, the prosecutors made a point of saying, these don't match the live rounds. However, we don't know what he had, because they waited a month to go get them. It was over a month when they searched. And when Mr. Kinney brought in the rounds, he had been talking to the investigator about what was going on in the investigation. So we're never going to have an idea as to what Seth Kinney had and what he provided, because he also told you in this trial he had no inventory system. He had no idea what was coming in and going out of his place. The place was a wreck. It looked like a train had hit it. There's no way for somebody to really understand what they're putting in, what they're going out. And so he also said there were things that went onto the rust set that he hadn't inventoried, hadn't invoiced. He said that there were things that put on there that he didn't have invoiced. So here's the problem with that. We do not know that Seth Kinney only had those patinaed rounds. That's reasonable doubt. That's coming right from the government's witnesses, from Mr. Kinney. That part is unreconcilable. There is a reasonable doubt that will never leave this case on those two points, on the pictures and the live rounds. Now, Ms. Morrissey calls it dishonest for us to raise a question about Mr. Kinney. And I submit it's not dishonest at all, because they have the burden to investigate every possibility, every aspect. As anybody in Ms. Gutierrez Reed's place would deserve and would want, because their life is on the line as well on felony charges, and it's the government's duty to rule out all these other things. Far from dishonest, what it is thoroughness, competence. Finding what happened with Seth Kinney, taking his fingerprints, taken his DNA, going through and searching earlier, doing that investigation, and finding out if indeed there is another possibility that they ruled out right away and they never wanted to look into because they rushed to judgment on Ms. Gutierrez Reed from the very beginning. They singled her out on that set. They put her in a cop car, whether she asked or whether they put her in. She's in the cop car and she never leaves custody until after her statement. They singled her out and they rushed to judgment on her, and that's what you've seen ever since. Ms. Morrissey says, a camera crew, and she mocks things that we raise as possibilities on the idea that none of it can be possible except Ms. Gutierrez Reed is guilty. That is the only thing that can be possible because I say it. It's not how it works. Ms. Morrissey said she indicted Mr. Baldwin. I indicted Mr. Baldwin. Actually, I think it's the state of New Mexico. That's not an individual person with that power. She also sat there when Ms. Zachary was on the stand, and Ms. Zachary, I'll remind you, got an immunity agreement. Ms. Zachary was promised she would never be prosecuted. And Ms. Morrissey stands up and says, there's no evidence against Ms. Zachary. Well, then why was she given an immunity agreement? Why would she need immunity if there's nothing against Ms. Zachary? She's given an immunity agreement, and then she's told on redirect examination by Ms. Morrissey, remember, if you don't tell the truth, I can prosecute you. I will prosecute you. So Ms. Zachary doesn't tell the version of the truth that the government believes is true. We saw the threat in live court. You can't trust some of the witness testimony in this case, and that will raise a reasonable doubt as well, I submit, because of things like that. Because the lead investigator admits that she practiced her answers and questions with the prosecutor. That's something you can consider. Are you hearing everything? Or are you hearing a one-sided version that fits the narrative that Ms. Gutierrez Reed has to be guilty because we picked her out first, and it's gotta be her. Can't be Mr. Kinney, can't be anything else, any other possibilities. Sarah Zachary has nothing to do with it. Even though we know unquestionably she threw away rounds after a shooting. That's undoubtedly gonna be evidence, but there's nothing on her, apparently. Second, these boxes, the idea that the boxes match. We heard testimony that these rounds were loaded in and out of these boxes daily. Nobody knows what was in them on the 13th, the 16th, the 21st, because the rounds were put in, they were taken out, and they were put in different boxes. So the boxes really don't matter. There's reasonable doubt all over the place to the boxes because we don't know what was in them 3 or 4 days before. Doesn't matter who brought them. The boxes are interesting because the government wants to match up the two and they want to show the pictures that match, yet all the ones from PDQ Props have the same label, same font. They're from Joe Swanson. So those boxes are similar to the ones on set. So that part is not conclusive as well. The other part, when the government shows you video and video of video only on the 13th, and says Ms. Gutierrez Reed was lax on safety. Well, again, you're seeing videos from short snippets of time on one day, on an entire movie set, and then you're not seeing what Ms. Gutierrez Reed may have done right after the clip. You're not seeing what might have happened right after that. The other thing that strongly rebuts all of the safety points Ms. Morrissey is pointing out about Ms. Gutierrez Reed is OSHA. Now, they try to downplay OSHA, but OSHA is a separate, independent state and federal agency that did a full investigation into the responsibility for safety failures on this set. And you can evaluate the credibility in your minds of Mr. Montoya, who took the stand, and how you thought he testified, whether you thought he was thorough and how he answered questions. He interviewed quite a few people, and he reviewed a lot of information. Their conclusion after that was done was that production was responsible. He said the root cause was production adopted a safety plan, and it ended at the word adoption because they didn't do anything after that. They didn't respond to complaints that there were safety concerns. They didn't allow for more training and take the time to do that. They did not respond to the negligent discharges and deal with that. Mr. Halls talked to one of the guys briefly, and that was all that happened. So you got to set that they're not allowing it time for inventory for the armor. They're not allowing time for them to clean their weapons or deal with their weapons. This is management. You just heard Mr. Pesch state that the first assistant director is the primary person for safety on that set. Dave Halls has been doing this 30 years. Somebody doing it 30 years has a responsibility and duty to step in when there's safety things going on, and he's on several of those videos. He has a responsibility to step in and say, hey, we're going to stop this. We're going to slow this down. We're going to have meetings. We're going to have additional safety training, and we're going to address this. Ms. Gutierrez Reed, come over here. We're going to do this, and we're going to talk to people. She also can come in and talk about that. And on those videos, they're both on the videos. But OSHA found, because of the lack of support, because she's a part-time armorer, because she's not full-time, because she's not, there's not two of her, as Mr. Carpenter said, two is one and one is none. Well, here we didn't even have one. We had a half. So she's trying to run around and do various things. She's a half a job on a set with over 20 guns, and they want to lay the complete blame on her in this case, as opposed to OSHA, who investigated as an official agency and made an official determination that this was production and management that was responsible. That's important. That's an important finding, because they said all of this was caused safety-wise by management. As Mr. Sousa told you, the buck stops with production. The buck stops with production, as in any organization. It starts at the top. You don't go and take one of the lowest people on the call sheet after something bad happens, after the whole management team has just thrown safety aside in favor of money, in favor of speed, in favor of profit. You throw all of that aside, because at the end, you've got a convenient fall person. You've got a convenient scapegoat. And she may not be the armor on some days. She's the props person, but she's certainly the armor when everything goes bad. You know why? Because despite OSHA's findings that they were responsible, production, the guys that you saw come in, the producers, the big guys, they want to sail off into the sunset and go on about their business, finish the movie, make the money, because they've got the convenient fall person sitting right here. And all that has to happen is everybody has to gang up. Everybody has to have their talks after this happened and blame Hannah. That's what has to happen. That's what happened in this case. You had a production company on a shoestring budget, an A-list actor that was really running the show. He was directing people in those clips, telling the camera person where to go, telling the armor where to go. And then you had a situation where at the end, they had somebody they could all blame. It didn't work out with OSHA because OSHA didn't buy it. OSHA said it was the higher-ups. So here we are in a criminal court where the government tries to pin all of it on Ms. Gutierrez Reed. And it's just not the truth. It's absolutely right. We do want the truth. We want the truth and all the facts that were found by OSHA to be considered. We wanted all of the facts that you don't have in this courtroom to be considered, because that's the only fair way to do it, to resolve all reasonable doubt and to rule it out. If you don't have all the evidence, you can't rule out all of that reasonable doubt. I want to talk about foreseeability, and I want to play this for you. Ah. You probably remember that. That was the scene where Mr. Baldwin runs up the hill and cut is yelled. And right after cut is yelled, he shoots. That's, I submit, reasonable doubt, and I'll tell you why. Because Mr. Baldwin went off script. He chose to fire after cut was called. And you're going to see where he does later do the same thing in this tragic shooting. Mamie Mitchell told you on the stand, the script supervisor, that it was not in the script for Mr. Baldwin to point the weapon. It was not in the script for him to point the weapon. And we have to be very careful with facts when we're considering a criminal case and the beyond the reasonable doubt standard. That's extremely important because Ms. Gutierrez-Reed, nor anybody else, knew that Mr. Baldwin in that moment was going to point the weapon right at Helena and Hutchins and Mr. Souza and do what he did. That is the concept of foreseeability. Now, Ms. Morrissey gave you an example of if I hand somebody a firearm and it's loaded and then they go and do something with it and it hurts somebody. But here, what we had, she did not know Mr. Baldwin was going to do what he did. No one, first of all, called her back into the church that he was using the gun at that time. She had given it to Halls to sit in the church. Mr. Halls then gave it to Mr. Baldwin, and that is the conclusion of the lead investigator. That was what Baldwin said, and that is what Ms. Gutierrez-Reed said. So Halls hands it to him. No one calls her back in to let her know Baldwin is doing that blocking scene. She doesn't know that's happening. The medic said she did not hear anybody call that out, first team, over the channel. So that's not getting put out. So Baldwin's doing another audible like he did on this video that you just saw. He's going off script. That defeats any idea that that was foreseeable to Ms. Gutierrez-Reed. If she doesn't know what's happening, she can't foresee it. That's a big part of the instruction. The other part I want to talk about foreseeability and where this matters is live rounds. Now, live rounds in this type of situation has not happened in Hollywood. In the 100 years of Hollywood, this has not happened in a situation like we saw in this case. No one on that set foresaw, knew, or thought that live rounds were going to be on that set. No one. You did not hear one witness in this case. Even Ms. Morrissey said there was no evidence that Hannah knew about live rounds coming on or this was done. There's no evidence of that. Nobody thought live rounds were going to be on set. Mr. Souza told the doctors he couldn't believe it. He argued with them because it was inconceivable that live rounds would appear. Because of that, when you read the jury instructions, there's a concept in the involuntary manslaughter of an element of willful disregard of the rights of another. That word willful, and I'm going to go over it soon, means purposeful. That you willfully do something, you purposefully do something. What's impossible for the government to prove in this case. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to talk about willful more in a moment when we get there, but it cannot be willful if Hannah does not know there's live rounds, and nobody did. So she did not do something willfully knowing that Baldwin could foreseeably hurt somebody with this firearm because she didn't know it was live. And let me give you an example. It's akin to a nurse, let's say in a hospital, who the pharmacy mislabels a drug. And let's say it comes to her and somebody's ordered it be administered to a patient. She then administers it not knowing that it's a fatal drug of some other type. The pharmacy's mislabeled it. The patient passes. It's the same situation as we have here, where the government would be saying the nurse committed involuntary manslaughter. No, that's not true, because she did not know what happened. It's like a long time ago when the Tylenol capsules were laced with cyanide, way back in the 80s or somewhere around there. There was no prosecution of the pharmacies that didn't know about this, that were tainted by it. It's the same type of situation we have here with the nurse. Ms. Gutierrez-Reed did not know there were live rounds, and she was entitled to rely on production buying dummies and the boxes labeled dummies. She's entitled to rely on that, and that reliance is reasonable. So she cannot foresee a live round. Now, I want to talk next about Ms. Gutierrez-Reed's statements to law enforcement. You saw her first statement. She didn't have an attorney. She did waive her rights and answer her question. She had not been advised at that time Ms. Hutchins had passed. And she came in a second time and answered all questions. The reason why I say that is she was cooperative. She was trying to assist in what this investigation, what they were investigating. Now, Corporal Hancock never fully investigated the source of the live rounds. And she told you that she focused on people on the set. So again, in ruling out reasonable doubt and where those live rounds came from, we have not done that in this case because there was never a full investigation as to the source of the live rounds. Let me give you an example. The state never called Joe Swanson. And it's kind of remarkable because Joe Swanson was the original source of where these came from. He's also the JS in all the boxes. So the idea that the person where it originated, you wouldn't call that person and get some more information is interesting. But more than that, it leaves a huge hole in the origin of the live rounds. Let me tell you what else it did. Seth Kinney's fingerprints and DNA were never taken. Seth Kinney talked to Corporal Hancock 40 times or more. They supplied information back and forth. And he starts making you wonder about what's going on and why I'm called dishonest for raising the possibility that maybe Mr. Kinney was the source. Because he's pretty tight with law enforcement in this case, obviously. They don't do a prop search warrant until 6 days after the incident, and that was Corporal Hancock and the rest of the sheriffs. They don't search Mr. Kinney's business until over a month after. They never asked the FBI to check live rounds for fingerprints or DNA. And so we will not know if Mr. Kinney's fingerprints or anybody else's would have ever appeared on those live rounds on set because they didn't get that evidence. Bryce Ziegler, I want to tell you a little bit, remind you a little bit about his testimony, and that's Mr. Ziegler. He talked about Baldwin's revolver being single action. You have to cock it, and then every time you want to shoot it. He testified about breaking that firearm. They actually destroyed the firearm after testing that was approved by the sheriff by hitting that with a hammer. He talked about that you can't determine a live round from a picture. And that's the other point I think is important to consider when considering the picture analysis. Now, the Latin print examiner, examined various things, but she did not examine anything Seth Kinney-wise. There's no analysis on the cartridges from the prop cart, and found 8 FBI employee prints. Mr. Gillette, on the powder testing. Only tested 11 rounds from Seth Kinney. Again, we know that he brought back 125 from the group that went to 1883. And I also want to remind you about 1883. Some of those were Starline brass rounds. And some of those, he said, had silver primers. So when we get to the set, the live rounds are Starline brass, and they have silver primers. It's a continuous chain that could have been traced from Del Reed all the way to Seth Kinney, all the way back to the set. But they did not do that thorough investigation, and that's reasonable doubt they have not ruled out. The dummies, again, I submit, this is another area of reasonable doubt. Witnesses testified this set contained a dangerous mix of dummies. They were dangerous because it was impossible for the armor and prop master to hear and rattle all of the dummies, especially under pressure, rushing, and noise on the set. You saw there was a lot of wind that day on the lapel. There's people running around. There's, I think at one point somebody said 200 people. There's all kinds of things going on. And despite that, Mr. Haig indicated in a quiet office he could not hear one of the dummies when it's rattled. That's dangerous because when you're trying to do it quickly, when there's a lot of noise, it may be a dummy. It may not. You can't hear it rattle. Seth Kinney, again, mentioned in this case that he always rattle tested his rounds, and he made sure they're dummies. He told you all that. Well, the problem, even the box that they say was Seth Kinney's and the rounds that came out of it, there was one round, if you remember, that was gunked, and it didn't shake. That round had to be sent to the FBI to be broken apart and to be checked to see if it was live. So if he truly is that thorough in shaking, he missed that round. Now the producers, they had oversight over the budget team. They didn't know where the funds were set aside for the armor. They were on location for filming, and they were fined the statutory maximum by OSHA for managerial safety violations. Again, OSHA found that the management team are the ones responsible. And yet, we're here with Ms. Gutierrez-Reed, the person on trial for the felony offenses. Sherilyn Schaefer was the medic on set. You recall she did not have chest seals. She, I think, was doing the best she could with the equipment that she had, but she didn't have the complete equipment to deal with a gunshot wound. She also indicated she never heard anyone call out use of a gun before the fatal shooting. Mamie Mitchell, I touched on this earlier. Most important thing Ms. Mitchell said was that it was not in the script for Baldwin to point the firearm. That goes directly to the element when you read the jury instructions and you all go back in to deliberate. That goes to foreseeability and whether or not anybody can foresee the moments Mr. Baldwin pointing the gun, using it as a pointer. He's up on the hill shooting after cut, and then he's shooting, pointing the gun when he's not supposed to in scenes. David Halls was the first assistant director, as you remember, and he was in charge of overall safety. Now, he got a misdemeanor, 6 months unsupervised probation, even though he was in charge of overall set safety. He never raised any concerns, and in fact, I think he said Hannah did a great job as armor. He indicated he did not hand the gun to Baldwin, but the sheriff contradicted this, so did Hannah, and so did Mr. Baldwin. And that was essentially Mr. Hall's testimony. Sarah Zachary, I remind you, she threw away rounds on set after the shooting, took items off the prop cart. She worked for Seth Kinney, and she texted and called him right after the shooting. One of her texts, she indicated she had said she was talking to Alec Baldwin and trying to keep her facts straight. She mentioned that she had loaded firearms on set. She picked up ammunition from Kinney at PDQ. I'll remind you in the testimony that Sarah Zachary and Hannah Gutierrez-Reed went to Kinney's place before production started, and he had given them ammunition, leathers, and firearms. So again, we don't know exactly what Mr. Kenny may have supplied to this set because it's not inventoried, it's not all invoiced. I also remind you about Sarah Zachary when you're considering her credibility and her testimony. She had the text where she wanted Hannah to go to jail, and she's given complete immunity. Seth Kenny, again, I mentioned this, he supplied the letters, guns, and ammo before arrest began. He had no inventory system. And we attached some pictures to the right that you can look at in the jury room about his place. It was an absolute mess. There was stored live ammo in the bathroom. And one of the things I think was important to remind you of is he actually called Joe Swanson and had a conversation with him. And after he gets off the call, his first words are, shit, shit, shit. And so that's something as an investigator you would think, after he does that, maybe I should call Joe Swanson and see what's happening, see what that means. That reasonable doubt has not been ruled out. I went over this on the 1883 set, and he brought 125 rounds back. Mr. Carpenter, I want to remind you, he was the state's expert armor. One of the most important points he said was two is one and one is none. And here we didn't have a properly staffed armor component to the set. Luke Haig, he said the live rounds on set were reloads. He could not hear the dummy rattle in the quiet office, and he said Mr. Baldwin violated basic safety rules. Karen Kuhn, you may remember, was the photographer. She said the armor was checking guns before when she was present. And she also made a comment about Mr. Baldwin that on the day she was taking questions, I believe she said on the 21st, he told her to get out of his personal space and said something in a manner that kind of goes along with how he was on the set. Mr. Souza was kind about it. He said he had a strong personality, but you can see it in the videos, and you can see how Mr. Baldwin was acting. Rebecca Smith, I want to talk about the tampering. She said that she hadn't used cocaine in 31 years. She saw a baggie inside a baggie for approximately 5 seconds. She didn't know if it was cocaine or meth or something else. Now, she admitted at the end she was guessing. And we also know that the substance in the baggie was never tested. And so the only evidence you have of narcotics in this case is a guess. Now, Ms. Morrissey, in her closing, indicated that, well, of course we don't have the evidence. The whole thing is throwing it away. Well, you have to prove first that it was evidence. So in a normal tampering case, when, let's say, a firearm's thrown away, and we know a firearm was used, and somebody throws a firearm away, we know that was a firearm. So we know that would be evidence in a case involving a shooting. Here, we have an unknown substance. Again, they have to rule out all of the reasonable doubt by that. It's not enough to say it's probably something under a criminal standard. It's probably cocaine in that bag because Ms. Smith says it is. If it even happened, we don't even know this happened. The government hasn't established that except through her testimony. We don't know if there was a bag. We don't know if this actually was passed. And that's their burden. Let's say it did happen. That you believe it did happen. It's not enough to say what was probably in that bag. They have the burden to rule it out beyond a reasonable doubt that it couldn't have been anything else. And she's already calling it in her testimony potentially multiple substances, cocaine, methamphetamine, or possibly something else. So she's not even certain about what it is. Without a test, without something presumptive to tell you on a test, there's no way of telling what was in that bag. And it's not enough in a criminal case. OSHA, we talked about in detail, and I just want to remind you the root cause they found, they attributed all the responsibility for safety issues to management. Mr. Elliott, he was defense expert investigator. Got an extensive law enforcement experience, if you recall, in APD and military. One of his big points was Mr. Baldwin was not segregated at the beginning, even though he was the known shooter. Hannah was segregated right away. Again, they zeroed in on her and the rush to have her identified. He indicated there was 20 or so key witnesses not identified and segregated. And the problem with that is they can get their stories together and they can change their stories. They can have their memories altered. We know this happened in this case because after the incident, Mr. Baldwin is talking to Sarah Zachary. He's texting and talking to her. Seth Kenny is talking to Sarah Zachary. Mr. Halls is talking to Baldwin after. And so we don't have all the information they're talking about, but we do know they're coordinating, they're talking. The only one not in that group was Hannah. And again, this was the idea. We've got to circle the wagons, and we've got to pick out the person that's going to take the fall for everything that's happened here. That's Hannah. That's who they got. Law enforcement failed to follow up on the origin of the live rounds, and their delayed search warrants caused problems with missing evidence. P.J. Pesch testified just this morning. He had said, like everybody else, he's never seen in 35 years an armor split duties with props. It's not possible for one person to keep track of so many firearms. And he indicated it's important to give the armor adequate time and resources, which OSHA said as well. She was not given that to do her job. I want to talk to you about the law that the judge instructed you on, and that is the law. What the judge told you about is what we have to follow in terms of evaluating this. The law presumes the defendant to be innocent. The burden is always on the state to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is a doubt based upon reason and common sense. The kind of doubt that would make a reasonable person hesitate to act in the graver and more important affairs of life. A doubt based on reason and common sense. So what the government has to do is rule out every reasonable doubt you may have based on reason and common sense. Or in this country, we don't convict people. That's the standard. And again, I go back to where I started at the beginning. If they didn't rule out the reasonable doubt on Miss Zachary throwing away the rounds, that is always going to be there. Because their theory based on you can identify these pictures and we know exactly what was on the set and what remained on the set, and what we will never know that because some of them were thrown away. And we didn't get all of Seth Kinney's rounds. We're never going to know that. Other areas of reasonable doubt, I've gone over the top two, top three. The prop cart was tampered with. We know that right after the incident, another individual moved it. Now, Lieutenant Benavides said he had eyes on the entire time. But if you saw that video, you can make up your mind what you believe. Ladies and gentlemen, his camera appeared to be pointed right into the vehicle, and the individual getting the cart was way off in the other direction. He said he had his head turned, but you all can decide what you think about that. The prop cart, there was unquestionably items taken from it. We don't know exactly what those are. That is another area of reasonable doubt that the government has not ruled out. You've had witnesses say throughout the trial you can't tell live ammo from a picture. And the reason is that the FBI said it has to be disassembled and you have to open it up because there's powder in it. If there's not powder in it, then it's not live. OSHA stated the root cause of all safety failures was management. OMI ruled this to be an accident, not a homicide. You heard evidence about the esophageal intubation was ineffective to provide oxygen to Helena. This also was a situation in this case where multiple lawsuits have been filed, and you can evaluate their testimony, those people who have filed lawsuits, with care and caution, because they've got an interest potentially in what's happening in this case by being involved in lawsuits. Involuntary manslaughter, you're going to have that instruction when you go back. That is the charge that Her Honor has read to you. She's given you the law on this. I want to focus you on a couple key points. The government has the burden to show each of these elements beyond a reasonable doubt. The elements are the numbered items. What that means is, if you all have reasonable doubts on any of these elements, Hannah cannot be convicted. And I want to focus you in on element three, that Hannah acted with a willful disregard. Again, you go back to willful disregard, the nurse example, and the idea that if somebody doesn't know, I mean, that could be the same thing with a nurse on trial for involuntary manslaughter, but if she doesn't know the drug was mislabeled, you cannot hold her criminally accountable for something like that. It's the same thing in this case, because no one knew there were live rounds. So she did not act willfully in anything that happened that day. In loading the firearm, this was another day everybody thought on set. Loading the firearms, running to different things, doing the duties. Nobody's calling her back in for the blocking scene. Mr. Baldwin's doing something on his own. Nobody in the wildest dreams thought there was a live round. And because of that, the next element is that Hannah Gutierrez-Reed that caused the death. I submit to you that what caused her to pass was Mr. Baldwin going off script and pointing the weapon. Now, he didn't know there was a live round on there either. He didn't know. Again, he's in the same position that nobody knew there was ever going to be a live round on that set. But the only ultimate act is pointing of that weapon. Ms. Gutierrez wasn't in the church. She didn't point that weapon. She didn't pull it. Nobody called her back in. And because of that, those two elements, I submit to you, have not been proven on involuntary manslaughter. And they have to be. The government has to resolve all your reasonable doubts about that, or they don't. You cannot. We cannot convict. Mental state and willful disregard, and that is going to be in your instructions. For you to find the defendant acted negligently in this case, you must find that the defendant acted with willful disregard. And so again, that's the terminology, is willful disregard. You're also going to be instructed, the court instructed you, Her Honor, on negligent use of a firearm. And that is a lesser included offense of the involuntary manslaughter. So when you go back and deliberate, you will have this in front of you as well, whether Ms. Gutierrez-Reed endangered the safety of another by handling or using a firearm in a negligent manner. And again, the language is acted with willful disregard. That's what has to be proven under that charge for you to resolve all of your reasonable doubts. Tampering with evidence, I think this is a real stretch, and it is a real stretch, and you talk about guessing. This one, they have to prove the defendant hid a bag of cocaine. Well, the only witness they have to it said it was either cocaine or meth or something else. So just by the testimony alone, the beginning of that, there's no way of knowing it was a bag of cocaine. It's just impossible. There has to be reasonable doubt on that by the government's own witness. Their only witness. No law enforcement testing, there's nobody else. This is absolutely unproven in this case. And you don't even have to get to element two, because element one is not even close to having been proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Proximate cause, it's a legal term, but it's something the government has to prove as well. And this is where you get into that the passing was a foreseeable result of Hannah Gutierrez's act. The act was a significant cause of the death. And the language I want to focus you in a natural and continuous chain of events uninterrupted by an outside event. What these mean, and these are the legal terminology, what it means is that what Hannah Gutierrez did had to be a foreseeable result. But again, that caused her death. But again, without her knowing that there was a live round, that's impossible to meet that standard. She did not have that knowledge, and there's no witness that came in here in this courtroom in 2 weeks to say she had that knowledge. Without it, nothing she did, she has that willful disregard because she just doesn't know. Now, was there an outside event as well? There was an outside event. There's two outside events. Whoever put the live round on set and then Mr. Baldwin in the end going off script and doing what he did. Those are outside events outside of Ms. Gutierrez-Reed's control that she didn't know was going to happen. That breaks any idea, and there's reasonable doubt that she had anything to do ultimately with Helena Hutchins' death. Ms. Gutierrez-Reed was not a significant cause as a result of her death because of the reasons I've mentioned to you. Another instruction her Honor gave you is that negligence of a third person, again, I'm going to highlight the language, if it breaks the foreseeable chain of events. Again, the foreseeable chain of events on that set is you have dummy rounds, you have blank rounds, and then you have an orderly progression with how those are being used. Here we had a completely unforeseeable live round, six live rounds that were on set, nobody could foresee. And then we have Mr. Baldwin's action in the end. Those were both unforeseeable to Ms. Gutierrez-Reed. The judge instructed you on, you all are the sole judge of the facts. You all are deciding the facts, ladies and gentlemen. And your verdict should not be based on speculation, guess, or conjecture. That goes back to the tampering charge. It goes back to some of the other aspects the government has told you. In this country, we can't decide and convict people on guesses. And that's a lot of what they've asked you to do in several areas, to guess, to assume, to speculate. It's not sufficient to convict people in this country to guess. It's not. And that's what they brought you and they've asked you to do on the tampering and other aspects of their charges. And that's not sufficient. Ladies and gentlemen, Hannah is not guilty on all the counts because of the law that Her Honor has given you. When you apply that law and you apply the standard of beyond a reasonable doubt, she could not anticipate what Baldwin would do. It was not in the script. It was not foreseeable. Management was responsible for safety failures and not Hannah. There's zero evidence of cocaine. There's no testing. And again, I go back to the idea that Hannah is a scapegoat for all the management failures. They do hope she gets convicted, so they're all exonerated. They can move forward. They can finish that movie like Mr. Sousa said they did and make their money. But as he also told you, the buck always stops with production, and it's their responsibility. In any organization, it goes from the top down. And that's where the responsibility lies in this case. That's what OSHA said. And that's also the truth. And the truth is important. Because justice for Helena does not mean injustice for Hannah. Does not mean injustice for Hannah. It does not mean they get to steamroll her and they get to come in and spin their version of facts and they get to call it truth. Because that's not truth. Truth is bringing you, ladies and gentlemen, everything they can. Justice is bringing you everything they can. Justice is not mocking theories that could come true that might have been the case. Justice is not laughing in court during some of our exchanges. And you can evaluate that as to their credibility, whether that was professional. Whether if she didn't take court seriously, did she take the investigation seriously? I submit she did not. And so they can't come in here with a straight face and mock us and criticize us and tell you they have given you enough to convict her behind a reasonable doubt, because they haven't. Thank you.
State's reply.
I'll begin while the gentlemen are setting up the Elmo for me. Hannah didn't know there was a live round on set. I agree. If Hannah knew there was a live round on set and she loaded it into a prop gun and it was used to kill Helena Hutchins, she wouldn't be charged with involuntary manslaughter. She'd be charged with second-degree murder. She'd be charged with first-degree depraved mind murder. This is an involuntary manslaughter charge because she didn't know there were live rounds on set, and the reason she didn't know was through her own negligence, her own recklessness, her own willful disregard for the safety of other people. That willful disregard, that lack of care for the safety of other people that you have seen throughout this trial, it is shocking. For Mr. Bowles to come up to this podium and say it wasn't foreseeable that Alec Baldwin was going to go off script and pull the hammer and pull the trigger, he showed you a video of Alec Baldwin going off script. Alec Baldwin went off script. Hannah Gutierrez knew it. She was there. Hannah Gutierrez knew that Baldwin was loose. She knew it. She didn't do anything about it, even though it was her job. It was her job. It is her job to say to an A-list actor, if in fact that's what you want to call him, hey, you can't behave that way with those firearms. That is her job. That is what they pay her for. That is the job that she applied for. That is the job that she accepted. Foreseeability. You want to talk about off script? Just remember those videos of the stuntman. That's not within the script. She was there. She watched it. She knew these people would go off script. You know she didn't check the rounds. If she checked the rounds, they wouldn't have been floating around that movie set the entire time, undetected. Give you everything we've got. You have absolutely everything we have. This law enforcement team and this team of prosecutors have reviewed thousands and thousands and thousands of photos and thousands of videos. We have interviewed countless people, many of whom you didn't even hear from. We can't stay here forever. You have absolutely everything you need. One of the amazingly shocking things about this case to me has always been, and it's to Detective Hancock's credit, a defense attorney with his own agenda, no question, comes to her and says, it's Seth Kinney, it's Seth Kinney, it's Seth Kinney. That's his job. Okay? Let's make that clear. That's Mr. Bowles' job. He gets Hannah's dad to say, it's Seth Kinney, it's Seth Kinney, it's Seth Kinney. Rather than ignore them, she gets a search warrant. She took his speculative agenda, presented it to a judge, got a search warrant, and searched that man's property. And oh my heavens, what did they find? They found exactly what Thel Reed said they would find. They found live ammunition with semi-wad cutter projectiles. You have everything you have. You have everything we have. You have everything you will ever need to convict her. This is 100% foreseeable. Hannah Gutierrez is not a scapegoat. Hannah Gutierrez is not being treated as a scapegoat. Mr. Halls was charged criminally. To his credit, he took an early plea and he got the benefit of that. Mr. Baldwin has now been indicted. Everyone with criminal culpability has been criminally charged in this case. She's not being scapegoated. She is being treated like everyone else. She is not being given a break because she's a woman. She is not being given a break because she's young. Because that's not how the law works. Let me just review my notes real quick, and as I promised you, I am going to try to speed this up for you. Please keep in mind, Mr. Bowles comes up to the podium and says Sarah Zachary threw rounds away. She did. Obviously she did. She admitted it. She told law enforcement that she did it. And rather than try to prosecute her for tampering with evidence, for panicking and throwing some rounds away, she agreed to come in and testify, and her agreement is that she must testify truthfully. And she testified truthfully. You want to know why we don't have an inertia puller in evidence? Why we don't have a box of dummies that Ms. Gutierrez said she brought on set? She said she brought two boxes. We've only got one. You want to know why? Because she went to the prop truck on October 23rd, got access to it, took a bunch of gun belts, and a couple of boxes.
Your Honor, I want to object.
Where were we? She took stuff out of the prop truck. She took gun belts. You heard from Sarah Zachary that those were gun belts that she brought from another movie set that were already loaded with dummy rounds. Who knows what was in them? So, I want to make sure that we understand what reasonable doubt means. Reasonable doubt means the doubt must be reasonable. It is not a reasonable doubt to cast suspicion on Brian Norvell. It is not a reasonable doubt to cast suspicion on Seth Kinney. All investigative leads were exhausted. He simply didn't do anything wrong. You want to talk about scapegoating? That's the guy that got scapegoated. The doubt must be reasonable. And I don't have to prove this case beyond all possible doubt. If that is what the law required, my heavens, we live in a world of infinite possibilities. The government would never be able to prove a case beyond all possible doubt. We'd have to have a video of absolutely everything that took place. It's not the standard, and it doesn't have to be the standard. So when you're back there and you're talking about doubt, make sure it's a reasonable one under this set of circumstances. You know, Mr. Bowles says to you, these production outfitters were just from one day. That's right. All that happened in one day. Imagine what all the other days were like. That was one day. Mr. Bowles is right. The crew didn't believe there were live rounds on set. They believed that she was going to do her job. They believed that she did her job. This isn't Seth Kinney's responsibility to inventory rounds, although he did it. That wasn't his responsibility. Rust Productions didn't provide all of the dummy rounds to the set of this movie. You know from her own statements she brought two boxes on herself. We're not living in an alternate reality. All right.
Let's go through these. I'll go through them relatively quickly.
When you all go back into the jury deliberation room, you will have your own copy. So you certainly will have a copy to reference. These are some of the instructions that are important to us. Your verdict should not be based on sympathy or prejudice. Sympathy or prejudice, huh?
It's not showing on the screen.
Oh. Oh, I see. There we go. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. So it can't be based on sympathy or prejudice. And for any of you who are feeling sympathetic, because she is young and she is maybe inexperienced, although by her own statement to Detective Hancock, she would tell you she wasn't. You all are on this jury because during voir dire you agreed to follow the law. And I will ask you to do it right now. If you had said during voir dire, I can't follow the law, I feel too sympathetic, you wouldn't be here. And if you can't follow the law, you can probably excuse yourselves. I'm going to skip that one. That's an easy one. You must not concern yourselves with the consequences of your verdict. That is the law. That is the law that you agreed to follow. That is the law that you are required to follow. Hannah Gutierrez endangered the safety of another by handling or using a firearm in a negligent manner. There can be absolutely no doubt. That happened. Hannah Gutierrez should have known of the danger involved by her actions. Yeah, she knew. This was completely foreseeable. She was trained in firearms. She knows what we all know. Guns can kill you. You gotta be really careful. Her act caused the death of Helena Hutchins. 12A is the alternative theory. And so let me explain to you that 12 and 12A are alternatives. You must make a decision about guilt or innocence unanimously to the count, not to the alternatives. So six of you can say, I think she's guilty of 12, but not 12A. Another six of you can say, we think she's guilty of 12A, but not 12. Done. You're done. Hannah Gutierrez loaded live ammunition into a firearm. Yes, she certainly did. She told the police she did. She failed to perform an adequate safety check of the ammunition. Of course, you know that. She didn't do it just once. She did it numerous times. She acted with willful disregard for the safety of others, without question. So you are being presented with what's called a lesser included offense. And I will remind you the instructions that the judge read you at the beginning. Your first job is to see if you can agree on involuntary manslaughter. If you find her guilty of involuntary manslaughter on either alternative, you do not move on to this misdemeanor. It's done. If you find her not guilty of involuntary manslaughter, then you get to move on to the misdemeanor. You've heard a lot about that. I'll skip it. This is what we call a general criminal intent instruction, and I want to just make sure that you understand this instruction only applies to the tampering with evidence. It does not apply to the involuntary manslaughter because she is charged with negligent homicide, not intentional. Very importantly, are the proximate cause jury instructions. These jury instructions are what allows you to find Ms. Gutierrez guilty, even though Mr. Baldwin may have also been a significant cause of the death of Helena Hutchins. So let's go through it. The death was a foreseeable result of Hannah Gutierrez placing a live round into a firearm. Of course it was. The act of the defendant was a significant cause of the death of Helena Hutchins. The defendant's act was a significant cause of death if it was an act which, in a natural and continuous chain of events, uninterrupted by an outside event, resulted in the death and without which the death would not have occurred. She brought a bunch of live rounds on set, accidentally, but negligently. She loaded one of them into a prop gun, and this was after they were loaded into Jensen Ackles' gun belt and Alec Baldwin's holster. And she told Dave Halls, this is a cold gun. He told the crew, it's a cold gun. At that point, everyone certainly assumed that there wasn't a live round. She knew Baldwin would go off script. She didn't have prop duties to tend to. She walked out. And even if she had been there, it wouldn't have made a difference because you have seen the incredible lack of control that she exercised as the only person on the movie set in charge of firearms. There is no intervening event. If you think the intervening event is that Baldwin manipulated the gun, that's the whole purpose of the prop. He's going to manipulate it. You saw a bunch of other actors do it. Very importantly, there may be more than one significant cause of death. If the acts of two or more persons significantly contribute to the cause of death, each act is a significant cause of death. If you think Baldwin's act was a significant cause of death, that's okay. You can still convict her. Jury instruction 20. If you find the negligence of a person other than the defendant was the only significant cause of death, or constitutes an intervening cause that breaks the foreseeable chain of events, the defendant is not guilty. Well, that's not this case. She brought the live rounds on set. She put a live round in a prop gun. That's the reason that Ms. Hutchins is dead. One of at least two reasons. I will again thank you very much for your time and for your attention. I know that this has been hard work for you folks. I will ask you to find Ms. Gutierrez guilty of involuntary manslaughter and tampering with evidence. And I will ask you to bring some justice to Helena Hutchins. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Instruction number 22, I will now ask you to retire to the jury room to begin your deliberations. You will be provided a copy of the jury instructions, and the exhibits introduced as evidence will be made available to you. Prior to beginning your deliberations, you will need to select one of you to act as foreperson. That person will preside over your deliberations and will speak for the jury here in court. Forms of verdict have been prepared for your use. You will take these forms to the jury room. When you have reached a unanimous agreement as to your verdict, the foreperson will sign the forms which express your verdict. You will then return all forms of verdict, these instructions, and any exhibits to the courtroom. There are 12 that deliberate. There are 4 alternates on this jury, given the long length of this jury. Keeping with the privacy, I'm going to pass this instruction down with the help of Ryan. You're going to look if this is one of your names, and you are one of the alternates. What I'm going to ask the bailiffs to do is to first take the alternates out so they can get their belongings, and I'm going to ask you to meet me down at the end of the hallway to explain. I hate to tell alternates they're alternates because they've been paying so close to the evidence, just to talk with you, and then and thank you, and then right along on your clip will be the jurors themselves, okay, and the jurors will go into the room. So I'll need the aid of both of them. But first, let me pass this piece of paper over to you. Look down here. There's 4 names. See if one of them is yours and you're an alternate. It's at the bottom. All right, so follow the alternates, follow Ryan. I'll meet you down at the end of the hallway after you get your belongings, and then you'll follow with the jury. All right, we're in recess. I'll be back in, but we're in recess. You can get going with your exhibits and things like that.